Welcome to this week's Books and Culture podcast with Books and Culture's editor, John Wilson, and I'm Stan Guthrie. John, we're going to preview the November-December issue of Books and Culture. It's about ready to go to the printer, and I'm looking at a cover and lots of good stuff there. Why don't you tell us about it?
Thanks, Dan. The feature on the cover is a special section on art, and there are some etchings by the French painter Georges Rouault. There's a piece on him and Chagall by David Lyle Jeffrey leading off that special section. Then there's Edward Short writing about a biography of the pre-Raphaelite painter Edward Burne Jones. And then Joel Sheasley, who is himself a terrific painter, writing about the American painter George Ault, whose best-known work was done in the 40s. And then last of all, James Romaine doing a piece on the painter Jan Gossard, who was active into the period of the Reformation.
What's a special takeaway from that art section?
Well, you've heard me say many times, and maybe you and some of our faithful listeners are a bit tired of hearing me say it, that I like to think of every issue of the magazine as a kind of microcosm of the world and all its splendor and messiness. And In this case, I love the juxtaposition of these different artists who wouldn't appear in the same class if you were teaching it.
Yeah.
If you were teaching a class. I love the surprise. I love the fact that even though they don't fit under any one rubric, that when you read the four pieces together, and not everyone will. I love the pre-Raphaelites, and there'll be some readers who will also be lovers of the pre-Raphaelites, and they will read that piece, but they won't read the others, and so on. But if you do read them all together, you find that they play off each other in interesting ways. And that's not only true of that special section, but it's true of the issue as a whole, and it will also be different connections made by different readers. So, for instance, the issue starts with Mark Lewis, who directs Wheaton College's Arena Theater, reviewing an autobiography by the actor John Lithgow. And immediately following that is Sarah Hinlicky Wilson writing on holiness, and she uses three books by the Orthodox thinker Michael Plekon to use as a point of departure for her reflections. And there again, it's interesting to have a piece on theater next to a piece on holiness, because traditionally, especially when the theater occupied a larger space in the culture as a whole than it does now, the church tended to be, not always, I mean, there were Christian dramas, but there's a fair amount of pretty heavy strain of Christian criticism of the theater, suspicion of the theater, and even, again, at a certain time, of the theater as epitomizing the world in a pejorative sense. And it's very interesting to read Mark's review of Lithgow's memoir alongside Sarah's reflections on holiness. The pieces are interesting just read by themselves, but they're even more interesting if you happen to read them together. Then there's a long two-part essay review by Mary Stuart Van Leeuwen. The first part of that essay was the cover story of the previous issue called Neurohormonal Wars. And the concluding part of that, which is partly how we think of differences between men and women and the nature of those differences and how much is wired into us and how we judge that. It's a terrific, very thoughtful piece. And that second and concluding installment is in this issue.
What about Diane Glancy?
Diane Glancy, as you know, is one of my favorite writers. She's best known by readers who are especially interested in Native American writing, and that's where most of her writing has been. You've also heard me say that, in my judgment, she's such a wonderful writer that she is deserving of the Nobel Prize. I doubt if she'll ever get it, but she's that good a writer. She has an extraordinary imagination and at the same time a grounding in reality. This particular piece is from a work in progress in which she imagines biblical women who we get just scraps of. She wrote an earlier book that did some of this that's one of my favorites of hers called The Closets of Heaven. It's about Dorcas. You know, we don't know much about Dorcas, just a little mention of her. And she uses that little fragment we have, so to speak, in the New Testament to imagine more fully the life of Dorcas. And
that sounds fascinating.
It is.
That's kind of the writing I'm starting to gravitate toward.
And it's atypical for Books and Culture in that it's just a freestanding piece. Mm-hmm. But we do include those now and then. And this one is, again, I think, just marvelous. Another interesting juxtaposition of a couple of pieces is Philip Jenkins writing on a novel published many years ago by the science fiction writer John Bruner called The Sheep Look Up, a novel that has a strong apocalyptic message and also a novel which looks at America in a very critical light. And just to pique your interest, perhaps, Philip mentions he was thinking about writing about this book earlier, but he hesitated to do so because its plot includes terrorism presented in a way that is all too plausible. It's a powerful book, and Philip is a very interesting writer. So that is juxtaposed in my mind, not necessarily in your mind, but with Ed Blum writing about a book by the theologian Peter Heltzel called Resurrection City. And that's a book that urges Christians, and especially white Christians, to learn from the black church. And it combines some of the apocalyptic reading of American history and the contemporary American life that you find in Bruner's book with a Christian hope that is not present in Bruner's book. So one question, of course, in reading both these pieces is, you know, to what extent is this reading of the American scene? That makes me think of Henry James and wondering what Henry James would have made of John Bruner and Peter Heltzel. But to what extent is this reading of the American scene true? How do we judge that? A lot of people certainly would find it plausible. Some would find it totally implausible. Is there any middle space? That is there a way that even if we don't totally sign on to the view therein, that we can learn from it?
And what do you write about in this issue?
Well, that's a surprise for our readers. But I will say this, Stranger in a Strange Land is smaller than usual in this issue because I had to find a color page to put an ad on, and there was no space left, so I had to plunk an ad. But I'm very delighted that the Calvin Institute of Worship was advertising in our pages, and so I'm just writing around that.
Yeah, it's not how many words, John. It's which words you choose. All right, thanks. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Dan.